Hello and welcome to the X-Files podcast. This is a weekly podcast in which we discuss the X-Files, which was a TV series that ran from 1993 to 2002, spanning 202 episodes and 9 seasons, 2 movies, and a reboot TV series, which I believe is a continuation, not a remake. I am one of your co-hosts, JP, podcasting out of Southwest Pennsylvania, and joining me tonight, as always, he's your friend and mine, Mr. Kyle Thomas, podcasting out of South Carolina. What's up, buddy?
What is up, JP? Back again for another episode. Pretty stoked to be back again, and hope everybody that's listening is enjoying this podcast as much as we are doing it. And what JP forgot to mention is this series actually did spin a form a spinoff show called The Lone Gunman as well. So wanted to throw that in there just to be cool and poke fun and be a dick. So
yes. If you guys haven't noticed, I am not very knowledgeable on the X-Files or its spinoffs. So that's the concept behind this show. It is Kyle being the sort of expert of the X-Files and me being the novice, and we go through the series. Really cool, really fun. We're having a great time with it. We do recommend that you guys watch the episodes and follow along with us each week when we post our new episode. Hopefully you watch the episode and then you can kind of hear us discuss it, and it would be fun to do that. Also, there will be spoilers in every one of these podcasts. We will be breaking down every episode from start to finish most of the time, and if you don't want to hear spoilers, I guess check out the show first, then come back to us. Also, I want to just quickly mention that we are a proud member of the Horrorphilia Network, which is a huge podcasting network. There's over 20 shows on there, I believe, all different podcasts, all different type of podcasts. I believe there is, you know, new podcasts being added all the time. Check it out, horrorphilia.com. Also, you can check the show out on 22shotsofmoodsandhorror.com. And now, we are officially on iTunes. You can search us in the iTunes store. It is 22 Shots Presents, the X-Files podcast. And Kyle, I know that you have a YouTube channel. What are you doing on there lately, buddy?
Yeah, I actually uploaded recently a couple of two or three videos last week. That's kind of what I've been doing since the last episode. I am still continuing. On my channel, if you guys aren't subscribed to it, check it out. I have a video nasty series where I try to review, one video nasty per episode. If you guys aren't familiar with the video nasties, they are a set of movies that were banned in the UK in like the early and late 80s. So I'm doing a review of a lot of those movies, and I also have a series where I do a disturbing movie series, basically just reviewing movies that people would consider disturbing. They're not necessarily all going to be quote unquote disturbing, but I do, you know, look at reviews and look at a lot of lists that people put out there about disturbing movies. The one I just did was Angst, which is a movie I believe JP, you and Jeremy did on the Mini Shots episode, isn't that correct?
Yeah, we did that on a Mini Shots episode, which you actually was a part of in the later section, which was the trivia night that was on that episode. It's Mini Shots 4, I believe. You can check that out on the 22 Shots podcast website. Pretty cool stuff. Did you like it?
Yeah, man. Like, it was one of those movies that, and honestly, it could kind of go similar to an X-Files episode in a way. It's not like X-Files-y as in paranormal or anything, but some of the X-Files episodes do deal with serial killers and things of that nature. I really thought it was a very well made movie. It had its, it had its high points and its low points, but I really personally, my favorite part of it was the way that it was filmed. I just love the first person kind of camera aspect, in the eyes of this killer kind of thing. So if you guys get a chance, check it out. I do include clips from the movie in a lot of my my reviews of the movie. So you kind of get visuals of, some things in the movie. So definitely check that out if you get a chance.
Yeah, for sure. That's actually a pretty good movie, too. I recommend grabbing the Blu-ray. It's a great transfer. Cult Epics put it out. It's a little bit pricey, but it's well worth your dollar. You mentioned you was doing the Video Nasties series where you're kind of just picking a video nasty from the list and watching and reviewing that. How's that working out? Because I hear some of those films are quite awful.
They are some of them. I've actually seen a lot of video nasties before I started this series, and I kind of got the idea from this series from a YouTuber called he goes by the YouTube name Horrible Reviews. He's been out for a while. He's
yeah,
like
I know
a
that dude.
Netherlands type dude, but he's one of my favorite YouTubers. I've always enjoyed his videos, and he did a series on video nasties. There's a ton of them that are just absolutely horrible. I'm kind of just randomly picking them. I'm not, doing any kind of order or anything. I'm actually, and the sad thing is, I'm kind of cheating. I'm picking ones that are known to be better than the shitty ones.
You're saving all the shit for last.
I'm really kind of saving the shit for later on. I just did a review of Fight for Your Life. Which is probably the most racist movie ever made, but it's also one of the best home invasion movies ever made, in my opinion, which, a lot of people say it is. But, that's the main reason that movie I just did was on the video nasties, because of the racism and the cursing. There's a lot of cursing in the movie. It's kind of just randomly picked. I mean, I really would prefer if, people that watch my videos would comment. So if you guys are listening, comment and let me know some video nasties you want me to review, because I'm kind of just picking and going with the ones that I own. I would like to purchase some that I don't own.
Yeah, there's a lot that are actually really hard to get off of that list.
There's a ton of them that are out of print, but they're not far-fetched to get. Like, the first one that's on the list is a movie that Derek got called Horrible. It was actually going for about $25, which is kind of expensive for a DVD, but if it's recommended to me, I don't mind.
If you could justify it buying it for the series, if the series is doing good, then that's not a problem. I think the same way when we do the 22 Shots show. One other thing that I wanted to ask you is, you're doing your Disturbing series, which is a good idea in itself. We actually, a long time ago, me and Moods and Jeremy and this guy named Clive and Stephen Ferrandino, we had this short-lived video podcast. And one of our ideas was to do an episode called Are They Disturbing? And review four movies that were considered disturbing and kind of discuss it. So I'm right with you on that idea. But one question I did have, did you get to The Girl Next Door yet?
I haven't reviewed The Girl Next Door yet. I've actually watched it two or three times already. I watched it for the first time. I actually found that movie. I was wanting to see it. I found it at a pawn shop for 50 cents. Bought it. It's Jack Ketchum's The Girl Next Door.
Correct.
Bought it. It's based on a true story. Watched it. It was pretty fucked up. And then I wanted to watch it with my girlfriend, because my girlfriend just loves fucked up shit, which is awesome. Me and her watched it, and she really liked it. And I have been yet to review it. I am going to review that, so be on the lookout for that sometime soon. That's a good idea for me to actually do in my next video review for the Disturbing series. So I may actually do that next, because I haven't really thought of anything to do next. I wanted to do August Underground's Mortem, but I really have a hard time sitting through those movies for some reason.
You might want to start with the first August Underground, which is
which is the first one. I was going to do the trilogy all in one video, but I just have a hard time sitting through those movies. I don't think they're horrible, but at the same time, they're just, some of those movies are really, really low budget, and like, I have really bad OCD, so it's hard to keep my attention with them sometimes. I hope you guys check it out, and let me know if you guys have any suggestions or anything. That's honestly my number one watch videos on my page, is all my Disturbing Movies reviews. So
yeah, it's a great idea for a series. I like it very much. I haven't actually got a chance to watch many of the reviews, because I really am not a review watcher that much. But what I got going on the 22 Shots is, we just wrapped our Michele Suave episode of the podcast, which was the third week in the Italian Horror Month, and I think that episode's going to do really well. We really break down Cemetery Man and really get into a deep discussion on the meanings behind it and stuff. I really loved Cemetery Man. It was a great movie.
I love that movie as well, so I'm glad. I'm yet to listen to that, because I think you just posted it, but I am going to definitely check that out.
Yeah, so by the time you guys hear this podcast, that one will be already out, and we will be working on our fourth and final week in Italian Horror, which is Mario Bava. So be on the lookout for all things 22 Shots, as well as my YouTube channel. I got some things going on here and there all the time, so check those out as well. I'm still uploading my DVD collection videos. I just posted one today, so check that stuff out.
I will say that I started watching your full collection videos, and I really enjoy those. So I'm gonna say, like, I didn't even know you had those, and I just randomly you told me about them, and I just randomly went to them the next day, and I started watching them. I was like, damn, this is actually, like, you and Moods have the best, you don't do a shelf by shelf, but it's almost the same as what he does.
Yeah,
you kind of show it off, and then you talk about it. I like that. I think that's pretty cool.
Yep, and that's actually the second time I've done that series. I did it years ago, like 3 years ago.
I'm sure everything's changed since.
Yeah, it did. That's why I redid it. So yeah, that is what's going on with us. But Kyle, it is episode 3 time. Season 1. We're already on episode 3, man. This is moving along very quickly. I believe you have the director and the writer all ready to go. So who directed and wrote this one?
Yeah, so we're in season 1, episode 3. If you guys have been following along, this episode's called Squeeze. It was originally aired, and this title, I will say, is perfect for this episode. That was one of the main things. Like, I sort of remembered the episode a little bit. I kind of forgot it because I haven't seen the season 1 of X-Files in probably a couple of years. I have seen this season probably a million times, though. But I remembered, you know, I remember hearing I remember seeing the actual title, and I was like, wow, this kind of really goes along with the series or with this episode. So this episode actually originally aired on September 24th, 1993. Which was about, I want to say about 8 days after the original episode, 7 or 8 days. So it was, you know, they come out per week. So, the director of this episode was Harry Longstreet, which sounds like a fake name in my opinion, or a porn star. I don't know how. I didn't see any other episodes directed by this guy, but Harry Longstreet. It was written, last week's episode was written by Chris Carter, which is the creator of The X-Files. This week it was written by two people, Glenn Morgan and James Wong, which I didn't really look into. James Wong, for some reason, sounds familiar to me. I can't really put my finger on it, but I didn't look.
I think you're thinking of James Wan.
I may be. Like, that name just sounds really familiar, but... but yeah, I mean, it's written by Glenn Morgan, James Wan. It's a kind of a co-written episode. I didn't really see any other episodes written by them. There may be in like future seasons.
I will tell you that James Wong did the Final Destination films. He was a director of them, and he does direct a episode of The X-Files, and he is directing an episode of The X-Files for the new 2016 series.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Well, that is cool to know. Like, I was going to say, like, I want to say I've heard of James Wong from Final Destination, but something I will tell the listeners is a lot of the people that direct and write these episodes of The X-Files that are in, like, future horror or, like, future, you know, any kind of movie or cinema, this is how a lot of them got their start. Like I was telling you guys last week, Vince Gilligan from Breaking Bad, the creator and writer of Breaking Bad, he got his start on X-Files. So you will probably hear a lot of familiar names whenever we go through this. So,
yeah, it does seem like these two have worked together a couple times because they have worked together on like 21 Jump Street, both of these writers. And the X-Files, they actually wrote a couple episodes together. And actually, Black Christmas, one of them wrote the Black Christmas screenplay, the remake Black Christmas. And Wong actually did just write a few episodes of American Horror Story, as well as the Rosemary's Baby remake on TV. So, I mean, he's had his hand in horror for quite a while, and he continues to have his hand in horror. Seems like these are more writer types than the director types, though.
Yeah, and I will say that, like, I mean, I'm going to go through the episode. I will say that I'm very excited that an original writer, especially from the first season, is going to be writing an episode from the newer season, from the newest season, so which is going to be season 10 when it comes out. So that, I think that's pretty cool that they brought somebody back like that. Or maybe he showed interest in it, and they were like, hey, you know, this is kind of, like, open for grabs. Who would want to do this? Who would want to write this? I think the new season's going to have a common theme to it because I think it's only, I don't know, 6 to 10 episodes. Do you remember?
I think it's six.
Yeah, it's not going to be a long run season. Like, season one has what, like 23, 24 episodes in it or something?
They all have like that many.
Yeah, so it's not going to be a long winded season. I think they're mainly bringing it back because there's a lot of hype for it. But, you know, I am still interested to see kind of how this season goes because a lot of the previews of this new season that's coming out shows on TV, a lot of the things that are showing in the preview are completely opposite of what you see or is going to happen in the series. So really excited to see how that turns out. But we're not talking about that. We're not talking about season 10. We're talking about season 1, episode 3, Squeeze. You want to go ahead and get into the episode, JP?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
All right, cool. Well, this episode starts out, it's a little bit different. Well, it's a lot different than the last episode, but it's a little bit less exciting, let's just say.
This one is not part of the main story. This is a Monster of the Week episode.
Definitely. Definitely Monster of the Week episode. You're still kind of getting backstory or kind of character development on Scully and Mulder's characters in the first season at this point. So it's mainly building on their characters, I feel like. So, but this episode starts out, you see a guy in a, just a random guy, who's like a businessman walking down or walking in like a car, you know, a car parking garage or right down the road with a briefcase. It shows, you know, he's walking down the road just like a normal, kind of like any other normal day, like he's leaving work, holding this briefcase. It shows the close-up of a sewer, and there's like these weird cat-like, or I don't really know how to explain it. I guess cat-like is the best way to say it. Cat-like eyes looking out of the sewer. The sewer's pitch black. It looks like, you know, they're about to film a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles episode. And this guy is just, or somebody is looking out of the sewer with these like cat eyes. Then it kind of pans out. The guy walks into this building, the guy with the suit on and the briefcase.
It's like an office building.
Yeah, it's like an office type building. Kind of reminds me of the World Trade Centers or something along those lines, like how that would be laid out. Or like maybe like a call center or something. He walks into the building. You know, there's a lot of cubicles, and then he walks into an office. There's just an office door, and he calls his wife and leaves a message that he's going to be at the office for a while. He's going to be late. There was some kind of a meeting that came up, and he was running behind. All of a sudden, it kind of pans out, and you see the elevator door open that he had just got off of. It had closed when he got off of it, and then you can hear the elevator start moving again. The elevator door opens, and all it shows is the rope that's holding the elevator up. That's all you see. And then it pans back to the guy in the office, the door just completely shuts. Like, it shows right before the door shuts, it does show one of the vents in the actual office, in his office, that the screws for the vent, like if you look up in your apartment or house, wherever you guys live, and you see a vent, like, you know, an air duct vent, it shows the screws for the vent kind of unscrewing. And then it shows a hand kind of starting to poke out of the vent. And then all of a sudden the office door, he goes to get coffee. The office door slams shut and you hear a bunch of screams like, you know, like maybe he's being murdered. Maybe he's, you know, jerking off. I mean, you really I had to throw that in there for good measure. I just wanted to kind of lighten up the mood at this point. So the door shuts, he screams, you see blood dripping from the door, and then you see it kind of pans
off.
That dude
must be jerking off really hard.
He's jerking off and there's blood everywhere. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's dripping off his desk, it's dripping from the door, and then it kind of pans out and he's lying on the floor.
Murder.
Yeah, he's dead. This dude's dead, obviously. There's blood everywhere. And right before the credits play, or the opening theme, obviously, the infamous theme, it shows the vent that it showed earlier was unscrewing. It shows it shut itself, and then the screws are starting to screw back into the wall.
Yeah. So now, what Kyle failed to mention is this vent is small. It's not human-sized.
Mm-hmm. This is like literally, if you looked up in your house right now or wherever you guys live, I know everybody that's listening probably has a vent somewhere in the room they're in. Or if they're in their car, maybe not. But if they're in a room or if you're in a living room, wherever you are, you look up, you see a vent, it's that size, if not smaller. Maybe even smaller and skinnier than that vent. But it's very, very small. It's literally the size of like your – if you could probably put your hand in it. I think that's pretty much about it. And it pretty much closes shut and then the credits play. So – kind of left when before the show really starts with this kind of cliffhanger of,
what the hell murdered this guy?
What the fuck was this? Like, you know, it could have been a ghost. Could it have been a monster? We don't know. So
could it have been a cat?
When you saw those cat like eyes, it could have been a cat. You never know. So, it's funny. If you guys don't know, I do show notes. You know, I kind of rape these episodes when I go through them for all they're worth. And I'm going to come up to some notes here. I'm just going to literally tell you what I wrote down because it's going to be funny. But we'll get to that in just a second. I just wanted to say that. But the next scene, once the credits play or once the opening theme plays, you see Scully eating lunch with a former classmate. I wanted to try to figure out where I've seen this guy from before. I've seen that former classmate from a ton of TV shows. I just cannot. I didn't look it up because I didn't really. I wasn't even going to mention it during this podcast. But the guy that's her former classmate, he's got red hair. He was in a lot of. I want to say he was on Titus, like this TV show from Fox back in the day called Titus. I could be wrong, but he.
He was in a few different, you know, TV shows. I don't see a Titus. He was in Sons of Anarchy. He was in The X-Files, obviously. He was in ER, Grounded for Life, House.
Grounded for
Law
Life,
and
that's
Order.
It. That's where I remember him from.
Oh,
Grounded
and
for
you know where I know him from?
What's that?
Gotham. He plays Harvey Bullock.
Okay. I never watched Gotham, but I remember him from Grounded for Life. He was the main character. He was the dad in Grounded
that's
for
it.
Life.
That's so. It. Gotham podcast. That's coming up.
I need to watch Gotham. That sounds like a pretty cool show. So.
Yeah. He was in Blade. He was in Three Ninjas Knuckle Up. There's some TV. Yeah, I've definitely seen him around.
Yeah, I was going to say he's been in a lot of stuff. But you see him, it's kind of like a guest episode, like kind of like the last episode was with Seth Green. He's a guest star. You know, he was in a lot of stuff after this episode. But he is one of Scully's older classmates or a former classmate. And they're pretty much sitting down eating lunch in this like kind of diner. And they're talking about classmates that they graduated with and where they are now kind of ordeal. Like, you know, hey, where's this guy now? What is he doing? And then he kind of starts, this guy really is a bully about Mulder. Like this guy thinks Mulder is like a complete and utter joke. He pretty much starts talking to Scully about, hey, you know, you're working with spooky Mulder, you know.
And this is a theme throughout the episode where he keeps kind of like downplaying Mulder and throwing some shade at him. And, you can tell that it begins to annoy Scully and she kind of gets defensive about it, which is nice to see because it shows that like even though Scully and this dude were cool or graduated together, she's really team Mulder now. Like they're partners and she takes that very seriously. So there is some character development like you alluded to at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, you gotta what do you gotta kind of look at in this episode when you know you see this guy kind of talking shit about Mulder? And that's the funny thing I was talking about when I took these notes is a lot of the things I was putting in my notes were Tom talking shit about Mulder at this point in the episode. So like I wrote down that literally, it was pretty funny. You got to kind of like see the character development at this point. I mean, you know, Scully at this point has seen some things that she never thought she would see,
and she's seen them with Mulder, which is
and she's
important.
Seen them with Mulder, and she didn't believe Mulder, and then it happened. So there is a lot of character development at this point where Scully's starting, like you said, to go toward Team Mulder. You know, she's starting to question some things. So, you know, and Mulder is still known to be the best, I think it was like homicide investigator for the FBI before he took over the X-Files. So Mulder is he's a veteran, you know, with the FBI, even though they don't like him. So, he's talking shit about Mulder, saying, you know, how do you like working with spooky Mulder? And then he kind of, you know, Scully's kind of like not really impressed. I may be wrong. I kind of feel like he was trying to impress Scully a little bit. Like, I felt like he was kind of like crushing on Scully a little bit and she wasn't really having it. Yeah. I just kind of got that idea a little bit whenever I was hearing them talk, but he pretty much looks over at Scully and says that he has a case that is kind of odd and he wants, you know, to kind of check it out and he wants to be the lead caseman on it. Then he starts talking about how the guy in the office building in the first scene was killed. And there was, you know, each victim, there's been several victims of this somewhat type killing and yeah. Go ahead. I was going to say each victim was found with their liver ripped out.
Yeah,
so.
But it wasn't like cut out. It wasn't bit out. It was ripped out as if it was done by your bare hands.
Yeah. So that's kind of the odd thing to it. And Scully even notates, like she even says to Tom, she's like, hey, you know, this sounds like an X-File. And that's when he's like, he thinks the X-Files are a joke. Like you can tell that off the bat. He's like, no, the X-Files, you know, whatever, this is an X-File. But she's like, you know, that sounds kind of odd that, you know, these are being ripped out, like, by basically hand and not being cut out. So, like, she finds that very odd and, like, kind of Mulder-ish, I guess, with what's being described. So,
she kind of looks into the case a little bit, and then her and Mulder actually investigate the crime scene in which there's really no evidence because there's nothing on camera. It seems like it was done from the inside and there was really no way to get in there. And then Mulder spots a elongated fingerprint by that vent that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that there's like they go to the crime scene. when Mulder pulls, but before he, Mulder even pulls up, he's already talking shit about Mulder again at this crime scene. And Mulder walks up, Mulder's kind of like wondering why before he even goes into the room, while she's talking to Mulder about this case, he's wondering why he makes these other FBI agents feel uncomfortable. And then Mulder starts talking some shit about Tom. This is when they're in the room at the crime scene. He's like, hey, Tom's like, what are these? Is this because of aliens? And he, like, I think Tom said something about like them aliens being like white.
He's like little green men. And Mulder's like, no, actually, they're little gray men or something.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, yeah, they're actually gray. And he kind of like.
And he goes all science-y on him and shit and just like shows him up. And you're like, go ahead, Mulder. Look at you and your bad self.
He's kind of like he's kind of like secretly talking shit about Tom, like being a smart ass to Tom. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty funny. Sort of a comedic kind of element to the episode, because this episode is pretty downright serious, to be honest with you. So, get to the part, like you were saying, where the fingerprints are on the vent, and he actually finds a small hair on the ground as well, which he picks up and puts in an evidence bag. So kind of pans out, they're at the crime scene and then they leave. Mulder actually finds fingerprints from years back, over 100 years or around 100 years back, that match the same from the crime scene. So Mulder kind of like, Scully comes in and she's like, they don't want you at this crime scene. They don't want you on this case. And he's kind of like, well, I'll reason with you. What we can do is we can do like a separate case together and it won't have anything to do with Tom. And she's kind of like, okay. She doesn't really say okay, but she's kind of thinking in her head, oh, I guess that's fine as long as we don't have anything to do with Tom.
Yeah. So, and, he does match the fingerprint or the evidence to, like Kyle said, previous cases. And what he comes to see is that they kind of span a long period of time, 1933 and 1963. And that one of the important notes is that in each of the cases, there were sprees of five murders. So that leads him to believe that there should be another two murders, I believe.
Yeah, like so they start investigating, like you said. They see that this has been a span of a long period of time. And we'll kind of get to like how that ends up here in a little bit. But basically, at the next scene after they're, sitting there talking, Scully's typing up a field report, and then she's talking to the FBI board about this case, kind of saying, hey, this is the kind of murders that are happening. This is what's going on. There's really no evidence here. We don't see a lot of certain things, we don't see really much of a pattern. She hints at them staking out the murder sites of where all these murders are taking place that are kind of they're somewhat similar. Pretty much in the next scene, she's sitting in her car in one of these stakeouts. Mulder walks up and basically tells Scully she's wasting her time, that this murder suspect is out, and and he's actually getting his thrills. He believes he's getting the murder suspect's getting his thrills from being able to get in and out of these locations secretly without being detected, and that he's already pretty much accomplished that in the stakeout or where she's at in that murder scene, and she's wasting her time. So Mulder's like, okay, well, you have fun staking out this place. It's basically a car garage, and I'm gonna take off. As he's taking off, he hears noises in a random vent in this car garage. It's like one of those car garages that have like different stories and like outside car garage. He hears noises and he walks over to this vent and hears somebody kind of in the vent or something in the vent. He sees movement in the vent, kind of like if somebody was like shimmying up and down a vent. And, Mulder runs back and gets Scully. They run back over to the vent, draw their weapons and say, hey, you're gonna have to get out of this vent. Let's see who you are. The guy gets out of the vent. He kind of crawls out of the vent, this random guy. It actually ends up being, this guy named Eugene, who they take into custody and question.
In a really cool scene, they give him a polygraph test, and there's just, typical questions like, did you murder this guy? Did you, were you here at the time of this murder? And then there's, like, these weird questions that are, like, are you 100 years old or something?
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, Mulder, he's really kind of curious about this guy. He already thinks that pretty much you can tell from his.
Yeah, he's way ahead of everybody else in this episode. He already has like the plot laid out in his head of what that this guy was involved with the earlier murders.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you can kind of tell from his demeanor, like how he's looking at this guy as he's being questioned. He's like, yeah, we pretty much got the guy here. But he knows as well that the guy's probably not going to get caught because a lot of the questions are asking him aren't pertaining to the X-File portion of the murders. So, you know, this lie detector woman, the woman that's administering the lie detector test, she's asking him random questions or just questions that are, you know, what's your name? Did you kill this guy? Were you at this scene?
And then, now, let me ask you this. Why did he not fail on those portions of the tests?
That is a good question. I think it has a lot to do with...
He was just unsuspecting of the other questions. And it got him really nervous. Like maybe it's saying that he could have passed the test had he wouldn't have like, you know, been asked questions that he wasn't expecting. I don't know. I think that it's still a little bit of a plot hole.
Yeah. Well, I think it is definitely a plot hole, but at the same time, this guy is shimmying down chimneys and stuff. So
yeah, he might be able to like do something to his body.
He's been around for around 100 years. So I kind of feel like, and we're kind of spoiling it a little bit, but you guys will hear the rest of the episode, but I feel like this guy could probably beat a polygraph test. I believe that, you know, let's just say that there's no plot hole. I kind of believe this guy could probably beat the polygraph test.
Yeah, but he fails the test too. So if he could have beat the test, then why didn't he beat that part of the test? So I do think it is a bit of a plot hole, and it is of note.
I kind of feel like that he's probably been interrogated like that before and knows how like to make his brain, but he was
never
asked.
Well, he actually probably definitely was interrogated like that before because we know that he later on in the episode we find out that he was a suspect. Before yeah. as well.
And at the same time, I don't think he's ever been asked those questions. So I think he knew how to lie on those specific questions and then how to not lie on the questions. Because I don't think he ever expected to be asked, hey, were you around in 1933?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, no, you're right. But I do still think that, you know, even if we're going to explain it away, I think that it's note that it is kind of a little wonky.
Yeah, it is a little wonky. I will agree with that. So, he's asked these questions. He's obviously the lie detector person thinks he passed. Mulder does not.
Mulder's over there in a corner studying his questions, and he's like, "No way, this guy failed all three of my questions." And they're like, "Yeah, they're retarded questions. Of course he failed them."
Mulder 99% of the time will call bullshit on anything the FBI believes if it's not something he believes. You will find out, as you watch throughout this series or listen throughout our series, whatever you guys do, that Mulder is the best, you know, probably the best FBI agent ever. If he was a real person, he would definitely be, because the guy knows everything. He's just a fucking walking FBI encyclopedia, crime solving encyclopedia. This guy calls bullshit on everything, and he's always right. So, super smart dude. I mean, he's sitting like JP said in the corner over here with the fucking polygraph test.
The cops are ready to move on. Meanwhile, Mulder, they're ready to say like, "Yep, guy's innocent." Meanwhile, Mulder is studying the weird questions that he asked him and saw that he failed those questions, and the police, the FBI, of course, say that, well, those are just weird questions. Of course he reacted to them oddly.
And the thing that I found funny about this scene, not funny as in plot hole funny, but funny as in, wow, like it really made me feel a little bit more like Mulder is the man, is that he's reading this polygraph test, and he can fucking read a polygraph test. It's like, you know, okay, you're an FBI agent, you solve crimes, cool, but why do they even need a woman to a lie detector test woman when they got Mulder reading the fucking polygraph test and he knows what he was like? Oh, why is his endorphin levels higher in this what?
Yeah,
like, what the fuck? Like,
Mulder,
why do they even have this woman?
When it comes to that stuff, so, you can tell he's just like well versed in all areas of everything.
You could tell he does his research. So
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, but to answer that question, maybe it was like a conflict of interest if the FBI themselves were, you know, interrogating him or given the test. Maybe it has to be a professional, unbiased woman.
Which a lot of people don't believe in polygraph tests, which I definitely believe in polygraph tests, but you find those kind of naysayers are like, you know, hey, but, you know, whatever it may be, Mulder reads the polygraph test. He doesn't believe it. He calls bullshit on it. And then Tom, which is the guy from earlier, obviously, that we were talking about, He is really mad because Mulder asked a question if he was around a murder scene in 1933 or 1910. He's like, why is he asking these fucking stupid questions? You know, what do you mean is he around then? The guy's probably like 35 years old. What is he asking if he was around a murder scene in 1933? And Mulder obviously believes that this guy's a murderer. He states the readings for that question are off the chart. And he just doesn't believe it. And he looks over at Scully in this scene, and this was like the main scene that jumped out at me for this episode. He looked at Scully, and he's like, they're wrong. Eugene is the guy. That's the murderer. Like, the minute he said that, like, even if I didn't ever see the episode, I would believe that Eugene was the murderer. I'm just like, okay, how is Mulder wrong? So,
yeah.
So then the next scene, it shows Mulder and Scully sitting next to each other. They're down in Mulder's, I guess, X-Files room. They have, like, old papers pulled up, and then they got a computer pulled up with fingerprints on it. It's got a fingerprint from the crime scene where the vent, you know, where they took the fingerprint from the vent. And then he found a fingerprint. Mulder shows the fingerprints of the vent. That the vent guy matches the fingerprint he found in the office guy's office. So he shows the fingerprint of Eugene, and then he shows the fingerprint of that they found in the office, and they kind of stretch the fingerprint out.
Doesn't work if it's just, you know,
normal.
You push it over, like, on top of it, but if you stretch the, you know, fingerprint that they took when they arrested the guy, if you stretch it out, it matches the one on the vent. So
exactly.
That tells you that, okay, it's elongated, so it gives you that sense that, like, okay, his hands, like, are stretched.
Like, this guy may be, like, you know, morphing or whatever. And
yeah,
like,
he's definitely not a normal human.
Yeah, you'll see that, like, kind of as we go through the rest of this. There's not, you know, we're probably about halfway through the episode here. You know, the next scene after, you know, Scully's kind of like, wow, what the fuck? You know, I can't believe that this is true. Next scene, it shows Eugene, which is the guy they just let go. It shows him stalking another man in a suit. So it shows another guy in a suit getting out of his car, going to his actual house this time. Eugene is kind of like out in the shadows behind bushes, kind of stalking this guy, like looking in at him. And then it shows him – and this scene – and I'm glad I like put this down in my notes. The scene – do you remember the scene where it shows Eugene crawling up the side of the house?
Yeah.
Doesn't that remind you of Men in Black 1, the first scene where Will Smith is chasing that alien and he starts crawling up that building?
I haven't seen Men in Black 1 since it came out.
Dude, like, Men in Black 1, like, I've seen that movie a million times. I used to love that movie when I was a kid. And it reminds me, if you guys have ever seen it, the first scene of the first movie within the first 10 minutes of where Will Smith is chasing the alien and then he's crawling up the side of this building. It looks exactly the same. But it shows him crawling up the house. He gets on top of the roof where the chimney is, and it actually shows him morphing.
Yeah, it's like a small chimney. It's not like the kind that you know, people just climb down.
It's literally the
size.
Santa
Claus ain't coming down that chimney.
No, Santa Claus fat ass ain't coming down that motherfucker's. Like, it shows his – like, basically it would fit, like, your arm. Like, you could put your arm down in it. So it's almost like just an exhaust for a chimney. And it shows him morphing his entire body into that chimney.
Yeah,
so
he's like the stretch guy from Fantastic Four.
Exactly. That's exactly how it is. So it's kind of odd, and honestly,
it's like CGI'd.
And honestly,
doesn't
to be
look great. No, don't even say it does.
I was gonna say, dude. Honestly, for some of the CGI we've seen in the previous two episodes, it wasn't that
bad. Yeah, because it's real dark. I will admit that it does. You know, because it's dark, it doesn't look that bad. But it's definitely noticeable that. It's CG.
It's definitely cheesy CGI, but yeah. I think for 1993, that was pretty fucking...
Yeah,
like,
93 was really early.
They're probably like, wow, okay. But it shows him morphing down the chimney. The guy in the house, which would be AKA me after work, he's getting a drink. He's like, you know, relaxing. He's got a little cup of whiskey or something or rye. You know, he's about to light his fireplace up. And then Eugene just pops out of nowhere and just pretty much kills him. Like, just, you know, you don't see him killing him, but Eugene pops out behind him and grabs him, and then you see his legs there, and then it cuts to the next scene. So you can pretty much assume that he's dead. So the next scene pops up. It's FBI. It's the next day, or, you know, a day or two later. It's a crime scene inside the house. Tom tries
to cock block Mulder.
Oh, Tom is the biggest cock block in X-Files history, I think. This motherfucker, he knows just what to do, dude. Like, it shows his, like, the next day, they're at the crime scene in this guy's house that Eugene just killed. You know, Mulder walks in, and Scully, and Tom Zary's pissed off because he doesn't have any leads of what's going on. He still is kind of in the dark of like how he's going to explain this. And Mulder kind of walks in and he's like, "You're not allowed to be here." And Scully looks at him and's like, "You know, we have authorization to be here. You're going to get in trouble if you don't let us see the crime scene." And he lets Mulder go. Mulder
was
walks
like obstructing a fellow officer or something, and she like lays the hammer down. She's like, gets all official on him and shit, and he's like, "Oh, I can't do anything now."
Yeah, she's pretty much like, "Just don't fuck with Mulder anymore. Like, he's about to whoop your fucking ass."
Yeah, like, I played along long enough. Like, you're starting to get on my nerves now.
Yeah, like pretty much like at this point in time in this episode, Tom
is this
really...
is where he asks, "Whose side are you on?"
That's not this. No, that's not this scene. Okay. That's coming up though. But yeah, he, you know, you could tell in this part of the episode that Tom's really starting to piss off probably the viewers. He's just he's like the opposite of the protagonist. He's the antagonist. you know, Mulder's obviously the protagonist because he's being bullied by this guy. Mulder gets by him, walks up to the fireplace where, you know, the guy was holding his glass and was trying to light the fireplace up, and he sees the same fingerprint on the fireplace as, you know, the previous fingerprints that were found in the previous crime scene. So something he also notices is there is a object or a, I don't know, what would you call it, like a knick-knack, I guess, from the fireplace that's missing.
Yes.
So there's a common theme to a lot of these murders is obviously this fingerprint is showing up that only Mulder can identify because it's an elongated finger. But there's also like an object that's missing from from, you know, each of the houses that these murders are happening. So
yeah, and we find that out actually once they go to visit a Frank Briggs, who was a former detective, and he was sort of involved in the early years of the Eugene case.
Exactly. Yeah. So they start kind of researching, and they find out that this former detective was researching these former tomb. The last name of Eugene is Tomb. These former tomb cases are Powhatan Mill murder cases from 1933. They go over to this old investigator's house that used to work for the police, and they kind of question him, talk to him. He actually states that that the livers were not all that these, you know, this murderer took. He also took small objects with him as well.
Yeah, kind of like, which adds kind of a level to it, to where it's not only he's like this monster who is, you know, taking these livers, he's also kind of has serial killer tendencies as well.
Exactly.
Which is even more creepy because it's like double the bad.
Exactly. And something that, like, this is like the real kind of, I would say, arc in the episode is he actually shows pictures of the murderer, which when he shows them, it kind of pans off. You see Mulder's reaction, Scully's reaction, and then it shows the picture. It's an exact picture of Eugene Toombs. It's an exact picture of the guy that they had
And the picture is from 1933, and he looks exactly the same as now. So you realize that this guy has not aged. He has these powers where he could elongate himself. So you realize, like, this guy is some sort of mutant. And it's actually a pretty chilling moment when they show the picture.
It is, and I will say this as well. When they show the picture from that point in the episode on, that was this is my favorite part of the episode. Like, I love the ending of this episode. So pretty much they show him the picture. Mulder and Scully find the address to the previous, you know, to where he lived, the apartment that he lived in, which is in like an old abandoned building, basically.
Yeah, which looks cool as shit on the outside. It looks like old school, like 90s, like outside of like a just factory like type of setting, just, you know, run down.
Yeah, it looks like it's like been abandoned for a while. It's really run down. We have this. It's pretty funny. We have this mill in my town that we call Silent Hill Mill. It's pretty funny. It's like a really old mill. Looks just like this. And a lot of kids go there and they say it's haunted. You know, younger kids that are in high school, like I did, you can go in there and kind of walk around. It just reminded me of that, like, perfectly to the T. But they go in there. They go inside the apartment. Mulder says he feels very odd about the apartment. Like, it's a very odd feeling when he walks in there. Mm-hmm. Something I will notate about this scene where they walk into the apartment is when you see Mulder and Scully kind of like, they have their guns drawn, they have their flashlights out. That's one of the scenes from the opening to the X-Files that actually plays throughout entire series. Yeah. So,
it's a good scene.
wanted to notate that. It just shows them walking in. It's really nothing spectacular or anything, but shows them walking in. They're kind of looking around in the apartment. It's not really an apartment. It's kind of like a fucking, I don't know, what would you call it? Like a fucking room?
Yeah, it's just abandoned as shit. It's not really like a house anymore. It's just, you know.
It looks like shit, and it's just there, and there's like...
If you ever saw the movie Trespass with Ice Cube and Ice-T, it's just like, just straight abandoned like that.
Yeah, it's pretty shitty looking. I mean, it literally looks not... It looks like that nobody that I would know would ever live there, pretty much. So, yeah. So pretty much they're walking around the apartment, or the room, and they see like there's a mattress pushed up against the wall. Mulder, obviously, he immediately goes to the mattress, looks behind it. There's a big hole in the wall, a big enough hole to pretty much fit like a human. They start walking down into this kind of like cellar, which there, you know, in the hole in the wall, there's basically a ladder that goes down into this like under, I don't know, I guess basement. And they start walking down into it. And it leads down into a dark room, and they see a bunch of like random objects, kind of like knickknacks, similar to what is missing from a lot of these crime scenes. So pretty much they're looking at these knickknacks, like kind of what's going on here. And the room is huge. It's actually like, it seems like it's bigger, almost like a sewer almost. And it kind of ends up where there's this gigantic wall full of this like sticky substance.
Yeah, this is my favorite scene, by the way.
Yeah, it's definitely mine as well. It shows like a wall, and Mulder and Scully are kind of like kneeled down. They're looking at it, and they start kind of touching it. And Mulder is like, "Hey, this kind of seems like it could be bile, like almost like you know, it looks like a nest, like somebody's living in that wall."
Yeah, it's like they took all this different material and like held it together with this bile substance and created like a nice little nest inside of it, which is just purely disgusting.
Yeah, it really is. And like Mulder's kind of like kneeling there, and he says that he thinks it's like a genetic mutation. Like he thinks that maybe Eugene has like a genetic mutation that's allowing him to hibernate every 30 years, and the livers that he's actually stealing from these people are keeping him alive, like, after every 30 years. So,
yeah, it's, like, an interesting concept. It kind of reminded me of, like, Jeepers Creepers. I wonder if that was an influence from this episode, maybe, because it's, like, it's kind of, like, similar. The creeper would take parts of the body and use them to, like, regenerate and hibernate over time. This, it's more specific with just the liver, which is creepy in itself, but I really like the concept of this monster of the week, if you will. Got a lot of cool things going on, and, you know, the core idea of this guy coming around every, you know, 30 years is just bizarre, and the fact that he doesn't age, and the fact that he can stretch, and the fact that he builds his little nest out of bile and all this weird shit, it's really cool. I like it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I honestly thought the same thing whenever, like, I saw, like, you know, the bile and, I guess, the livers and stuff like that. I guess Jeepers Creepers is a really good way. I didn't think about that movie, but that's, like, perfect for this. Like, I mean, it definitely – I think that there was some kind of, you know, something that was taken from this episode for that. But
yeah, there's a lot of similarities with it in general. Just even the way the bile thing is, the nest is, like, the creeper had his wall of human stitched bodies together in the bottom of the church and shit. I think it's highly possible that Victor Salva was influenced by this episode of the X-Files. I wouldn't be surprised.
I think a lot of like later 90s or mid to late 90s and early 2000 movies were probably influenced by a lot of the stuff from the X-Files, because I know a lot of the directors of horror movies, they always notate X-Files as one of their, you know, one of their favorite things. So I don't know, it's a possibility. But get back to the episode. Eugene is – they're kind of walking out of this cellar at this point. They see this shit. They're like, what the fuck, kind of. And Mulder and Scully start walking out, and Scully is like, oh, I'm caught on something. You know, she's like – she kind of feels like she's caught, like she can't move. And she's like, okay, I got it. Like, I'm on the way, pretty much. And they look up. It kind of pans up, and it shows Eugene in the wall. And he's actually grabbed Scully's necklace. So the necklace –
that little item signifies that she's next.
Exactly, yeah. So he grabs an item, basically, like you said, that's going to show that he's going to get her next. And then – Mulder at this point has a stakeout team start watching the Tombs place, which is the abandoned building that they found all this stuff in. He gives them a description of of Eugene and kind of what they're looking for. They kind of still are joking around, making fun of Mulder, calling him spooky. And then this is the scene that we were talking about earlier, where Tom, he's really pissed off that Mulder is on the case for this. Like, he's like, you know, it pans out and shows Mulder shows Tom and Scully in this office. Scully says she cannot wait till he falls, basically goes back to his ways, and he like falls flat on his ass. And Tom's pretty much still making fun of Mulder, saying that he can't believe Scully's like this, that she's following him, and that she's pretty much on Team Mulder, which kind of, at this point you're pretty much like, fuck Tom, like he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, but Scully also doesn't want to just admit like, yeah, I'm on Team Mulder, so she just says that I'm on Team Victim.
Yeah, she does say that she's on Team Victim,
which once again reinforces her professionalism, her very serious by the book type mentality.
Exactly, but you can still tell that, like, even though she says that, like, she is like way for Team Mulder. Like,
yeah, but at the same time, that's on the inside, but on the surface she remains cool, calm, and collected.
Exactly. So kind of close out the episode. We're close to the end here. Eugene starts stalking Scully. He's got her little object, her necklace, and he's starting to stalk her. He finds out where she pretty much lives. Scully calls Mulder to tell him about Tom and how he's being a dick and how he's pretty much called off the stake team. He doesn't believe anything that Mulder is pretty much saying. So Scully starts to, Mulder doesn't answer. She leaves him a voicemail. Scully starts getting in the bath. And as she's getting in the bath, she sees that, like, a little piece of, it looks like honey, which is basically the bile that they saw earlier in the episode, falls on her hand. I think it was honey they used as the prop for it, to be honest with you. But it drips on her, and she runs into the other room. She knows that Eugene is there. I guess that Eugene saw them at his apartment, looking around. Scully runs into the other room, grabs her gun, and Mulder is on his way there. He's trying to get a hold of Scully. Scully's not answering. He already has a bad feeling that something's going to happen to Scully. Eugene pops out of a vent. So basically what happens is Scully runs out of the room. She grabs her gun. She's looking around her apartment like, I'm going to find this motherfucker. I'm going to kill him. Eugene all of a sudden pops out of one of her vents, and Scully and her start wrestling, basically. He pops out of the vent. They're wrestling on the floor. Eugene's trying to kill her. Mulder all of a sudden runs into the bathroom where they're at and handcuffs her and Scully handcuff him to the bathtub. So they're wrestling around. He gets handcuffed to the bathtub, pretty much he's just there, and he's pissed off. He's handcuffed to the bathtub at this point. So they pretty much caught him, which I honestly in the episode never thought he'd be caught, and I was like, wow, okay, he can morph out of like into a chimney, but he can't morph out of a pair of handcuffs. This makes no fucking sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's kind of odd. So pretty much at this point, the episode's over. The old investigator, it shows him, the guy from the earlier in the episode, the guy that was like researching the case prior. It shows him reading a paper, and he sees Eugene was caught. So he actually sees this guy that he was like investigating years before was caught. And then it shows Eugene. It pans out, shows Eugene in his cell at the police station, and he's actually making a nest out of paper. He's actually reading the weekly paper, the daily paper or whatever you want to call it, and he's cutting off pieces of the paper, making a nest out of it in the jail cell, which is pretty funny, I think. So he was kind of like, I guess he's still in his old ways, making, even though he's caught, he still has to kind of keep up this agenda of who he is. Mulder and Scully are standing outside the jail cell looking in. Mulder's like, we have all this technology as there is right now, but I don't feel any technology or any jail cell is big enough to hold this guy. He's still gonna, either way, nothing's gonna hold this guy. He can morph and get out of whatever there is. And then it shows Eugene getting his food in jail, and he starts staring at the little, it looks like a little door that they give him the food in, the door. Yeah, the little slot, and you can tell he starts smiling.
He just kind
You
of
can
grins
tell
at
that.
it, and you just know that, oh, shit. Which, you know, I'm pretty sure that I know that they don't really continue along with Monster of the Weeks. Like, it's just one and done, right? That, like, there's not a sequel to this episode out there, is there?
No, there's not.
Yeah, which kind of, like, bugs me a little bit, because I think that there should maybe could have been room to, especially in the new series, right? It would be cool to go revisit some of these Monster of the Week episodes and do like sequel episodes to them.
One episode, my favorite Monster of the Week episode, and we'll get to it. I'm not going to spoil
it
right
now. Yeah, I already
now,
know. It's in season 4. It's episode whatever. You talk about it all the time.
I know, but I really, really wish they would have done a sequel to that in the new season, which they're not going to. But there's some Monster of the Week episodes that do have sequels in the future seasons.
Okay, that's good. That's
So you will see those, but those are like few and far between. There's not a lot of them. So this one definitely doesn't have one. I'm with JP. I think this would have been really good as a sequel episode to see what happens to Eugene, because you pretty much get at the end of this episode that he's going to get out. Like, a jail is not going to hold this guy. This guy's going to be gone. So these killings are going to continue to happen more than likely, but we never see this guy again. So, you know, who knows? You know, it's just kind of one of those things that I guess they foreshadow, but you never get to actually see what happens.
It's just a scary moment they leave off where the monster's still out there type thing. It's you know, it's TV stuff. But I will say that I did read this on a little bit of trivia that they decided on making the liver the thing that he needs because the creator, Chris Carter, ate some foie goy or something, foie gras, which is goose liver. It's a fat goose liver, and after eating that, he decided to make it liver.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh. That's pretty cool. I guess it, like, all inspiration stems from something, right?
Yeah.
So interesting. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the end of the episode, guys. I mean, what do you take from this, JP? Did you like it? Did you not like it? I mean,
I want to hear your opinion first.
All right. So I know I'm long-winded about things, but agree or disagree with me, one of the two, I did not particularly care too much for this episode. I did in certain parts. Like, I felt like whenever they went down into the cellar and they saw this kind of like bile nest, I did like from that point on. But I felt like this episode was way too slow, too much of a slow burner. Like the beginning of the episode, like I guess the first 20, 25 minutes, I liked it, but at the same time, it's not a memorable episode for me. So I don't know. I would venture to say it's not the worst episode probably in the first season that I've ever seen, but at the same time, I just wasn't, until I saw that bile nest and got, you know, seen a little bit more of Eugene, I didn't really care for it too much. It didn't really hit the mark for me 100%. But at the same time, I thought the story was interesting. I did want to see, you know, Eugene get caught, but that was pretty much the only reason I kept watching the episode, obviously for the podcast, but the only reason I really cared for the episode at that point was I wanted to see Eugene, like what happened with him. I didn't really care about like the whole in-between story of, you know, he went back to 1933 and, you know, he's been around. It didn't really explain any of that stuff very well. It just was like, you know, hey, this guy's been, you know, doing these killings since 1933. Never told us why he became this way, really. It just was like, this guy is a mutation. He's living in the cellar. He's been here. He comes out every 30 years after hibernating. You know, I don't know. It just didn't really grab my attention too much. So, I don't know.
Yeah, actually, the 30 years thing, it does that as well. Stephen King's It.
That's true.
Yeah, I wonder what came out first. But anyway, I guess I'll explain what I thought of this one. It's funny because I'm actually, like, on the opposite of you. This is my favorite episode of the three that we've watched so far. I actually dug this as the first Monster of the Week episode. I thought that it actually moved quicker than the other two. Maybe it's because I actually, like you said, it's not that memorable, but this is actually an episode that I had seen growing up. Like, I do remember this episode a little bit. So it could be part nostalgia. You know, I've said that I've barely seen any episodes growing up, but this is one that I do remember. if any else even. I'm sure that as we go through the series, I'll be like, oh shit, I can't believe this was an X-Files episode. I thought it was like a Tales from the Crypt or, you know, Monsters or some other random anthology or whatever. Not Tales from the Crypt, because I know every one of those single episodes. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there's more episodes that I had seen that I totally forgot about. But yeah, I dug it, man. I like the concept behind it. Yeah, they don't let us know about everything, you know, why he does this or how he became this way, but I don't think it's really necessary for the TV episode. It could be nostalgia, or, you know, just that I like, you know, the Monster of the Week format and I like this one or whatever. But this actually is my favorite episode of the first season until, I believe, an episode called Ice.
Yeah, I mean, this definitely, out of the first three, I would probably say this is my least favorite so far. I mean, I really enjoyed the second episode. I know you didn't really care too much for the second episode. I didn't mind the pilot either. I mean, I really liked the pilot.
No, I liked all three. I did like all three. It's just this one is my favorite of the three. So far. It could be because it's like the Monster of the Week. And, just based on what I've seen from the show, before we started this podcast, I was actually working my way through the first season before we'd even considered doing this podcast, and before I even brought it up or even had the idea about it. And I actually stopped around episode 12. So these first 12 episodes are actually fairly recent in my memory, because I did watch them this year. I like Squeeze. It's pretty cool. Does have its issues and stuff, maybe a few plot holes here and there, but I think it's a good episode.
Yeah, and we definitely want to hear what you guys think about the episode as well. So whenever we post this, definitely leave us comments and, you know, let us know what you guys think. We are really, interested in hearing everybody else's opinion on this. So, appreciate you guys listening. We got anything else, JP?
No, I believe that's it, man. And as always, these listeners can keep chugging along with us and checking out the episodes. And I know that there are a few people like Jill who's actually went ahead and is on like season two now in just like 3 weeks, and there's some people following along with us, and I think that's super cool. That's really the main like reason why I want to do this. I think it would be really cool if people actually like start chiming in a little bit more as well. We are very new, and it's kind of a niche type of podcast, but I think we will build listenership. I know that Horrorphilia, I would be really curious to see if anybody's listening to us. Drop us a line over there. I know that there are people listening to us, but I haven't, it's our first time over there, so I don't know, know people and stuff. But the best way to get in contact with us, I think so, is the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror Facebook group. It is literally the best group on the internet. I say that hands down. I've been in literally 20s of horror groups, and ours is the best because it's so active. There's so many people in there. Get in there, man. Drop us a line. It's a closed group, so nobody on your real friend list is going to see you posting in there. I know some people are worried about stuff like that. Join it. We'll accept you. You could talk to us. Talk to us about this show. Talk to us about whatever. That is one thing that I recommend everybody in the world do. That group is awesome. Do you like that group?
Yeah, I love that group. I mean, pretty much like me and JP were talking about, like, I was going to start a Facebook group for something else. I can't remember what it was. And I was like, I don't even want to start. Like, I think it was for my personal, because I have a Facebook page for my, the Horror File channel, which is my personal channel. It's like a like page, but he was telling you should start a Facebook. Nah, I don't. Facebook group is like 22 shots for me. Like, I post all my stuff in there because all the viewers and listeners and all the people that are in there, they're very dedicated to horror and the genre in general, and like these podcasts that we do. So I would highly recommend checking that out. I'm one of the admins on the page. I think, JP is. Obviously, there's a ton of them. There's like 5 or 10. So the minute you, go in to join the group, we're going to accept you.
Probably the minute.
The moment, yeah. I know that, like, I literally, for my job, I sit in front of a computer all day. I always have Facebook up. So if somebody tries to join the group, they're going to get immediately accepted as long as it's not spam. So, so yeah, I mean, check that out. You know, we post, they post their podcast for 22 Shots. We post the X-Files podcast on there. Leave us some comments. Let us know what you guys think of this podcast. And, you know, let us know what you want. You know, if you want to see any kind of special episode or, you know, we do, you know, I always do plan on doing some of the movies, like a special.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to all that stuff, man, for sure. If you guys want more of anything, let us know. If you guys want us to tighten up the show, if you want us to, you know, make it longer, what do you guys want? Let us know. Also, you know, our YouTube channel is Double Shot J, the Horror File. You can find us there, communicate with us there, watch our videos there. You have anything else, man?
I have nothing else, man. I appreciate everybody listening that's listening. Check us out. I post the podcast weekly on my page. JP posts on his page. And it is still on the Horrorphilia's page. Yep. So check it all out there. But I appreciate you guys listening. I hope you guys tune in next week.
Absolutely. And I am JP. That is Kyle. You can see him on all types of websites where he poses as a cam girl weekly. And, you know, we are done. We're through. We're out.